Welcome to Insights for Manufacturing, the podcast that supports the UK manufacturing sector, hosted by Jeff Beecham, the manufacturer's recruiter. Hello and welcome to Insights for Manufacturing. I'm delighted to welcome my guest today, Thomas Flood, who is the co-founder at Engineers Insights. Welcome to the show, Thomas. How are you doing today? Now, we met back at the Automation UK event, didn't we, in Coventry a month or so ago. Your app, and we will talk a little bit in just a second about Engineers Insight, and we're going to ask you what it is and all of those sort of things. But we actually met at the Automation UK show, and I guess since then you've had some good news in that you've been asked to partner, as I have, with Automate UK, one of their sort of media partners. So well done on that. It's great to great to be talking to you today, and I know the guys and the team over at Automate UK doing a fantastic job. And there's lots of cool stuff coming out of there at the moment. But in terms of your business then that you've set up, so you're a co-founder, exciting times, as we were just talking about off air.
Yeah.
Can you tell the audience what is Engineers Insight and how do you support the manufacturing and engineering industries, Tom?
Yeah, sure. So Engineers Insight is a free mobile app designed to sit in the middle of industry as a resource hub, I suppose, for want of a better term. Back when we thought of the idea, it was going to be like a marketing tool. So a place for the big brands to post their products and then for engineers to find the latest releases.
Yeah.
When actually it's been slowly developing with brands in one area and then engineers on shop floors in the other, what their pain points really are. So things around documentation, finding everything in one place, what are the analytics, how many people are viewing it, how many downloads of documents, where are the documents is a big one for an engineer. Being able to push notifications to people's phone, product releases. We're just in the process of launching a jobs tab for jobs to be put into a portal on there. So yeah, it's growing into like this central resource platform to make it easier for everyone in the industry, I suppose.
Yeah, it sounds like a great concept. So many, different facets of engineering and manufacturing, but there's usually, quite a few common threads running between the different businesses. So to have a centralized hub of information or signposting to different resources, I think is great. So when did you actually launch this then? When did it go live?
We did our beta test in May and June of 2023.
Yep.
Started with about 30 people that I knew. And we finished the beta start of July with about 200 engineers. We've been in the market for 12, 13 months solid now. And it's been a very, very slow progress to get to where we are now, where we're just about to release like the new feature, and now we're bringing on partnerships with people like Automate, and big brands are now supporting it, which is great.
Yeah.
But when you spend years listening to entrepreneur podcasts and all this sort of stuff, and you think everything's going to happen tomorrow, and reality is it doesn't, it's hard work.
Yeah. And that resonates with me, being a small business owner myself and, hosting this podcast. You hope for immediate massive traction on everything you're doing, and life's just not like that, is it? You've got to put the effort in. Yeah, there's always a little bit of, it's nice to have a little bit of luck, but I often find it's all about connections and the networking that you do. And I know you're a strong networker. Things will come good. It just takes a bit of time, but I absolutely love what you're doing. What inspired you to start Engineers Insight in the first place? I mean, how did you come up with the concept?
Tell you the true story. I was sat in a boardroom at one of my previous employers.
Yeah.
And I seen an invoice for a hell of a lot of money from one of the magazines.
Yeah.
Essentially to print a pretty picture of a new product that we were launching. And the marketing manager had said to everyone, any phone call that comes into the office, you ask them if they've seen us in this magazine, because he was desperate to try and work out the ROI of that.
Right.
Five-figure sum of money that he just spent.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then I tried to find other digital solutions, and there really wasn't anything. There's a lot of websites out there, and a lot of publishers have websites,
but
they're equally antiquated. overpopulated text fields, flashing banner ads all over them. Very difficult to find what you're looking for. So I got together with an old friend of mine who became a software developer when we left school. He runs a team of developers for a couple of very big organizations that he, weekends and evenings, been trying to build a mobile app on the side, which is part of the reason it took so long to get it off the ground.
Yeah.
But you know, the positive is we own 100% of it. We didn't have to take investment on. So it's been a very slow process. Early days, obviously, I was still employed, so I was taking wire frames to shop floors. Bit naughty, I know, but still doing my day job, I must caveat that with.
Yeah.
But building relationships with engineers for them to feedback. And then over time, you know, I built relationships over the years with people that ended up working at places like Siemens or KUKA, SMC, that then I could have quiet conversations with about what they would want it to do, as well as the engineer telling me what they want it to do.
So you've done a fair amount of research then in terms of what your target audience or what your customers would want that app to be, and what sort of service and value that they can get from it.
We said from the very start, there is no point as just building something and hoping that someone will use it. We would much rather build a moat around us of all of these big brands of basically designed this so they feel part of it. And then the engineers are fed back for it to grow and the new features come based on what the engineers tell us. So they feel like part of this community as well.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I think if we'd have just built it and launched it, I think it would have fallen its face by now. Someone else would have done it better.
Yeah. And I mean, that's in the cold light of day, that may well be the case. But clearly you've got your head on your shoulders the right way round. And going into things blind is always a little bit risky, to say the least. But you've done it the right way, haven't you? You've sought some knowledge and some input from the people that ideally would be using, you know, the app in the first place. And hey ho, you're here, you're 12, 13 months in, and things are still building. So yeah, that's just going to multiply up, I'm sure. And, you know, things like this and the conversations at the exhibitions and the tie up with Automate UK, you know, there's going to be some really good stuff happening, you know, within Engineers Insight. And let's all talk it out. I think it's fantastic. And most things are app based these days anyway. You know, it's a struggle to get people off their mobile devices, haven't you? So
me included. there's a whole piece that we could talk about education, but there was a light bulb moment some point last year where I got fed up of speaking to the stereotypical grey-haired striped suit guy at an exhibition that I won't name who or where they work, but said to me, wouldn't work for me, Tom, I already know every engineer in the UK.
Really?
Which really, really upset me. Not upset me, frustrated me.
Yeah.
And then we me and Corey, my co-founder, we said, well, actually, young people expect an app to exist. So are we just talking to the wrong person? You know, why are we wasting so much effort trying to get, you know, this demographic to buy into the concept when actually we could be at colleges and universities speaking to 16 to 20 something year olds that are going to come into industry and expect to subscribe to 10 different magazines to know what's going on.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm now 30. I've never subscribed to a magazine. These kids coming in now, they've now grew up with iPads and tablets and
absolutely
phones.
Yeah.
You can't sell them the dream of robots and automation and industry 4.0 and then say, actually, you need to read a paper-based magazine.
Well, it's not living and breathing, is it? You know, there's nothing moving in a magazine. I know some of the magazines have got their own websites as well, which is great. But an app, you know, you've got the rich media in there. You've got the video, you've got, you know, the sounds and all of that good stuff. It's the way forward, isn't it? You know, any sort of business that's launching any sort of techie related service, has got to have it delivered through a sort of techie medium, hasn't it?
Yeah. Like even my customers have their own apps.
Right. Okay.
In the early days.
Yeah.
I've spoken to a couple of the big customers that said, "Well, why would we want that? We've got our own app."
Yeah.
But the problem is, for an engineer, if you're building a machine, you've probably got 10, 15, 20 different manufacturers on the machine. Are you going to download 15 apps to find the manuals? Have you got 15 tabs open on Google?
Yeah.
So you're still part of the problem. You still, everything is decentralized.
Yeah.
And disjointed. Even within their own document centers, things are disjointed. I've had that feedback from engineers, but then also the people that work at these companies that say, "Our tech support can't find our manual."
Brilliant.
Early days, people were saying, "Well, we've got our own app." But actually, they'd missed the point. For an engineer, they need it in one place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is the solution you want to create.
Yeah. It's a little bit like the machinery and equipment manufacturers. They've all got their own products and product applications. And, some of them sell to market directly, but then others will sell via integrators. And from an end user point of view, I absolutely love the concept of an integrator, or that sort of middle party, if you like, who are actually non-biased. You know, they're impartial. You know, they've got access to lots of different OEM, machine manufacturers. So what you're doing, you haven't got any specific agendas. Some of these individual companies will have their own app, but that will be from their own perspective, and it doesn't give all the rest of the stuff that people might need as well. So
from the very first pitch we did, the word we kept using was agnostic.
Yes,
we just want to give everyone a seat at the table. So the smaller brands that I've spoke to over the past couple of years, one of their biggest concerns is that they don't have the budget that the likes of Siemens do.
Yeah.
And that they're worried that, Siemens could pay us like Google. If you pay a load of money at the top. But we've said to everyone, we're building this so an engineer could find you in the same place as the people with a big budget. There'll never be a slot at the top of the newsfeed that someone's paid over the odds for, so they can stay there for a week.
Yeah.
Everyone has the same chance to be seen by a user. And when we get a bit cleverer, it'll be more social media-like, of on the user's preference or what industry they're in or what they download regularly. But it will still show all the brands. So you're not missing out on people seeing your product.
Yeah. So more of a level playing field.
Yeah.
What's been the sort of the main challenges then, really, from a launch in the business point of view to sort of starting to scale it and add things in? I'm pretty sure you would have had some late nights, long weekends, early starts, and all of the above, creating a business and helping it grow. What would you say have been the sort of main challenges?
I'm not struggling for an answer. I'm struggling to pick one of many. many things. Finance is a big issue for any business.
Yeah.
We rented our house out. I convinced my wife fiance at the time, to move back to my mum and dad's with me and the dog, so that we didn't have to pay the mortgage.
Yep.
The promise was 12 months, ended up being 18. And then in that 18 months, we got married and she fell pregnant. So then it was a way to get back to the house.
Yeah.
So, finance and then the personal stuff that you attribute to that, to trying to not let the company go under.
Yeah, yeah.
You take risks. Challenge in day-to-day is, convincing people that this is the right thing to do. People don't like change, which is the same, when I was selling automation, people don't like change.
Yep.
When you're disrupting an industry, people don't like the disruptor. Took a long time for people to think, actually, maybe we should talk to Tom.
Yep.
And now we have some really, really good potential partnerships with people that we thought would be competitors that are actually saying, well, if you were going to build a central place, could you build an area for us to put all of the media we create? But yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Because then you get views on your things still. You still have a business. We have more things that keep users engaged. That's great for both of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Challenges every day. It's
an ongoing learning process, isn't it? Yeah. But you seem up for that challenge, and you've got so much passion for what you do. And I think the industry has been crying out for something like this for ages. So really, really keen to follow this journey with you. I've recently downloaded the app myself. I haven't had a lot of time with running the day job and the podcast and everything else, but I'm looking forward to getting a little bit more involved and looking at the functionality on there myself. But in terms of manufacturing and engineering then, so you've set up this app predominantly for, engineers and businesses within industry. What are the sort of biggest trends that you're currently seeing there out in the market?
The biggest one, skills. Yeah. Every conversation I have is skills. Yeah. Every podcast episode that I do always ends up talking about skills.
Yeah.
How do we fill the skills gap? How do we support education? Of course, you've got the other things like sustainability and AI, and why aren't we implementing more robots and all this sort of stuff? But skills is the one that every single person I talk to either asks me about, or we end up getting passionate talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I see that naturally with my job. I mean, I typically deal with executives and, senior managers, but most of those conversations at some point revolve around, skills gaps, further on down the org chart, if you like, and sometimes at sort of board level as well. But, we do have an acute shortage of engineers, and, there aren't enough people coming onto apprenticeships rather. Those numbers have sort of gone down, I think, over the last 2 to 3 years. And yeah, I mean, we got so much opportunity, so much potential in the UK to be a great manufacturing nation again. But there always seems to be something just round the next corner that you start getting a bit of traction, and then, we have a recession, or we have COVID, or we have Brexit, or we have, geopolitical nightmares like this, the war in Ukraine. There are so many things, but most of these things we've got no control over. So it's really a case of, I think, a lot of businesses need to grow more of their own talent, look after their staff better. And I've just done a newsletter on staff retention and a short video myself. There's money going down the drain left, right, and centre with the, the constant revolving doors in some businesses, and it really is a crime. But it's interesting you said about the, getting, a high level of robot adoption, and that was something that I think, I don't know whether you caught the Automation UK forum talk at Automation UK over in Coventry, but that was the topic, and I sat in on that one, and yeah, there is an argument that, if you can't get the staff, adopt automation and robotics. And for a lot of those roles, it's possible to do that. But then you've got the finance question, and, typically with SMEs, they'll come up with, a number of different reasons why it's not so easy to just, deploy a cobot or a robot or a piece of automation. So it's an interesting dilemma. But yeah, the skills one is definitely right up there, I think, affecting all businesses. What about Industry 4? This has been around for quite a while now. Internet of Things, the IoT, joined up factory connectivity, digital twins, smart factories. I know Siemens are one of the businesses that are sort of, at the forefront of this sort of technology. But what impact do you think Industry 4 is sort of going to be having on manufacturers and engineers in the next 5 to 10 years? Because things have come forward in leaps and bounds, haven't they, to where we are today. But what are the sort of things that you're hearing right now about, where it's going to go in the future? Probably excluding AI, because that's another a niche topic in itself.
I think if you look at UK manufacturing, so I've been asked the question about the robot adoption a few times, and my answer is always that the biggest issue is the UK culture. And I think it's the same answer for Industry 4.0, Internet of Things, whatever buzzword someone chooses that week.
Yeah.
The UK manufacturing, you know, you go to a shop floor and someone's proud that the machine's been working 50 years. They're not so much interested in, come and look at my factory, a factory of the future or lights out factory, which we should be, but they're more interested in saying that, you know, the conveyor, they got a contactor off eBay and got it up and running within 24 hours. It's just the British mentality of we keep things running.
Yeah.
And when you compare the cost of a 20 quid contactor to keep the conveyor running or a huge CapEx project, you know, you as soon as you go to CapEx projects, where does the money come from? Which is always the concern. You know, I work for a big robot manufacturer. That was always the stumbling block. Mm-hmm. Was actually, if interest rates are high, can we actually afford to take the money from the bank to put in a huge robot line for $500,000 or whatever it might cost? And although, you know, Industry 4.0 isn't necessarily a finance thing, it's more of an adoption of technology, I think we face the same issue. Engineers are already stretched. How much more do you put on them to then say, you've now got 10,000 points of data, what are you going to do with it? You're an engineer on the shop floor, that you're already desperately trying to keep things moving. Do you have time to sit and, you know, work out the data points of every single sensor in that factory?
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
I don't know what the future holds in the next 5 to 10 years for Industry 4.0. If you look 5 to 10 years in the past, Industry 4.0 was a thing. Everyone could get data from things. No one did it. And then someone comes out with a buzzword and it gets put in all the magazines and everyone talks about it. But engineers on shop floors aren't in that conversation.
Yeah.
The people that are making them conversations are people like us that aren't building anything anymore. Or they're the big manufacturers.
Yeah.
Because they're coming up with the solutions for it.
Yeah. Yeah. That, very true. Very true. So what about the skills then?
Yeah.
Manufacturing engineering, we've got, you know, a whole generation of youngsters that have been brought up and been learning how to code and things like that. And it's something that I'm far too long in the tooth for all of that sort of stuff these days. I'd left school in the mid 80s. We did have computers back then, I have to say. You know, so coding, data analytic skills, you know, being able to interpret data, I think's probably one of the big areas. But what other sort of skills do you see as being absolutely fundamental to, you know, to the next generation of manufacturing and engineering? I mean, is it the, you know, how does AI work? You know, are more people going to have to get into that sort of side of things, do you think?
No, I don't think it's that niche.
Okay.
I think the key skills, communication, curiosity. If you're going to be a good engineer, you need to be curious.
Absolutely.
You know, troubleshooting, fault finding. I did a speech for a graduate event not so long ago, and curious was a word that I picked up on. And I said that, yes, your mind will go to them things for being curious. Actually, for you to have a successful career in manufacturing, you need to be curious about the people around you.
Yeah.
Actually, it's the network that you're going to create that will propel your career. So curious is a word that I use a lot. Communication, I think the next generation of potential engineers have a communication issue. You know, they've gone through COVID, they've been through lockdowns.
Yeah, very true.
Social media, they're desperate for validation. I had a lady called Fiona McGarry that works for Ingenuity on my podcast recently. And
I know Fiona.
She spoke about validation
being
an issue. You know, we touched on retention earlier. She said young people are coming into jobs now and the workshop manager or the MD, you know, it's only at SMEs, it's quite a small team.
Yeah.
They've not grown up in that. they grew up in the mind frame of, this is what you do, you go and do it. Well, now the young people coming in don't live like that.
Yeah.
They want constant validation. And if their manager isn't giving them, you know, weekly appraisal, well, not even appraisals, just this is great, or this is what you could do, or constant mentoring and coaching,
yep.
then they'll leave. And then we've got a retention issue.
Yeah.
I went through it 10 years ago when I was an apprentice, 12 years ago. The other apprentice on my scheme got put in the garage packing boxes. We worked for a global automation company. because he didn't get the validation 12 years ago, he decided he didn't want to be an engineer anymore and went off to be a teacher.
Yeah.
So we lost a potential very good engineer because he didn't get validation. Well, now, 12 years later, when everything is Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and it's likes and comments, and if you're just getting shoved in a corner of a workshop, you're not going to work there anymore.
That's a really interesting thought, and I have to agree with what you're saying. I mean, communication. I think collaboration is probably another word I'd like to add in to that as well, because it's, you know, building the knowledge and articulating. Well, it's not just about articulating what you're doing in your actual job. It's been able to, those interpersonal relationships and the interaction with your colleagues, your customers, your suppliers, your boss, your if you're mentoring an apprentice, those communication skills are absolutely key. But I think collaboration is something that, is that taught at schools these days? I doubt it. I think there's still a lot of silo mentality in society, let alone in the workplace. And there are, as you know, probably that, a lot of businesses have got pockets, cliques, silos. And I think, you know, if we're going to get this next generation of engineers, and we need a lot more of them, don't we? You know, thousands, probably hundreds of thousands over the next five to 10 years, we need so many more, but these people have got to, they've got to know how to act, react, and cope in lots of different scenarios. And that involves ultimately, you know, people skills, and being able to collaborate properly. So I think if being an executive recruiter, you know, I'm always thinking about leadership. That's, you know, that's where my commercial head's at. But really, you know, leaders have got that responsibility, haven't they, to make sure that they're providing the right culture. There's another C, the right culture for, you know, the existing workforce to keep them, but also to make their business attractive to the next generation. So it just affects everybody, isn't it? So how do you think companies can better support continuous learning and professional development then for their engineers and technical staff? Tom, I guess the Engineers Insight app is going to be a tool that they can use, but what else do you think needs to be at the forefront of learning and development?
Training, and I say that because it's in our mind's eye within Engineers Insight, actually.
Yeah.
we have another partner, MTC Training specifically.
Yeah.
The Engineers Insight will become a tool for the apprentices. But off the back of that conversation, we started talking about training courses, and wherever I've worked, they produce a lot of training courses. Salespeople don't normally get commission on them, so they don't talk to customers about them.
Yeah.
And they're normally hid away on a website somewhere. So we're talking about the MTC backfilling a central calendar that we're going to build.
Okay.
So an engineer can go to and search for anything, really. But let's say they wanted robot training in September.
Yeah.
We show them one of the available training courses, and they could buy a seat through it and make that easier for engineers to find training courses across different products, but then also, you know, entry-level courses or how-to courses or what is this sort of course, whether that's free or paid. I think manufacturers, employers need to look at that internal training. People like Jackie Hambury, who I've I think I mentioned up there actually.
Yeah.
He's a communication specialist or a mentor, business mentor, but she works with teams, senior teams, to help build cultures in workplaces that filter down, which then helps your retention.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of angles around training that we need to reskill and upskill people to fill jobs. The more robots we do adopt, we need to upskill people to be able to service and maintain, commission and program.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think training is the big one.
Okay. And in terms of Engineers Insight then, what are the plans over the next few years then? So you've come up with the idea, you've launched the app, all the reports are good. Obviously you're looking at scaling that now much further. What have you got some sort of, you know, long-term strategy? Where is this heading? You know, where would you like to see it get to? And what any exciting things in the pipeline as part of that growth strategy?
Just trying to think what we can talk about. we've got a lot in the pipeline.
Yeah. The
concern is that we run before we can walk.
Okay.
And I don't want to do that. You know, we take on new customers all the time, and it's now at the point where that new customer, especially if we're dealing with outside of the UK now, like central marketing teams, they ask, when are you going to be in Germany or Japan or other countries? And I always joke that we need to scale past Coventry first. But that's the reality, you know.
Yeah.
We need to build a solid business in the UK,
yep.
UK and Ireland, I should say, before we can worry about any of that. The features will build themselves, let's say, because of the feedback loop that we've sort of created. We have other features. The next one actually is already built, but the next one that we launch will be jobs. The one after that will be called Where to Buy.
Okay.
So we're not a point of sale. We've avoided that. But actually what we found is that we can show the manufacturers that hundreds of people have looked at this product and downloaded this certain manual or sent an inquiry, but we don't know if they ever buy anything.
Okay.
So again, feedback loop of the product to the distributor is that we then list the certified distributors of that product range, give the URLs to the web shop.
Yep.
So UTM that the distributor can monitor, we can monitor. They can see that the users come from us and put a product in a basket. So it closes that loop a little bit.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to upset the likes of RS, can't afford to. And we don't want to create a web shop. This piece around being a central resource thing, I think, is key.
Yeah.
It's agnostic and it's for the engineer. It's for anyone in manufacturing, I should say, not necessarily just an engineer.
Yeah.
Bosses or directors or whoever. And everything that we do moving forward has to be about creating value for the user.
Yes.
And I think everything else will follow that. Once it gets to a certain point and more manufacturers come on, I think then it will naturally scale and it will be whoever shouts the loudest or pays the most to decide which country we do next.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you've got lots of potential avenues you could take the app down, couldn't
yeah.
you? You could just bolt on more.
That's the plan.
Features,
yeah.
Couldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. The rudimental structure is there already. You know, we've given a central place for manufacturers to put products in and engineers to find them. Everything else will just be bolted on the side, like you say.
Yeah. And would that include services as well as sort of products and technical sort of documentation?
Yeah, I guess that get asked that so often. And we've avoided it just because we don't want to flood the app.
Yeah.
You know, if I opened it up to PLC integrators, then there's 1,000 PLC integrators that would want access to the marketplace.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden it's, you're never going to find what you're looking for and you're going to be inundated with PLC integrators.
Yeah.
So services is a strange one. I think even if we cherry picked certain services, they're going to have a lot of competitors in it.
Yeah.
And then we're not agnostic because we're cherry picking them. So for the moment, we're avoiding it.
Yeah. Now that makes sense. And I like the fact that you've got, this value of, being agnostic. I think, in certain industries, you can't be like that, but with what you're doing, it's definitely a strength. And, you want to be open to, to different products, different manufacturers, and for everybody to have an equal opportunity on, on the app. As we said earlier, it's a level playing field. Yeah. And I think that's a great value to have, really. So lots of things going on. We will continue to follow the journey of Engineers Insight. I know we met a month or so ago over at Coventry. Looking forward to catching up with you again at some point in person, Tom. I think you've got a fantastic business there, a really exciting and value-added product in Engineers Insight. And, thank you very much for coming on to Insights for Manufacturing today to talk about your brainchild and this growing resource that you've kindly developed for the manufacturing sector.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
No, you're very, very welcome. So that brings us to another episode completion of Insights for Manufacturing. Thanks again to Thomas Flood. Hope you've enjoyed the discussion today and look out for the next episode of Insights for Manufacturing. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.